How is everybody doing? And welcome back for another Strengths Chat episode. Today, I have got a very special guest for you all. Today, I'm joined by a physical therapist and owner of Fitness Pain Free. Today, I'm joined by the one and only Dan Poe. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for the introduction. That was a good one.
No. I always say that if I wasn't coaching, I'd be like a ring announcer or a commentator. See if that's it. So if anyone wants any help with that, I'll give that a go. But how are you, Dan? What have you been up to? What's been happening in your world recently?
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for having me on. Just doing my thing, right? I'm working as a physical therapist. I have an online business. And I'm pushing. I have a young son, so just kind of living life and doing it all. It's great.
Nice, plenty of things to keep you to keep you busy then.
Yep.
So obviously, having seen the content you put out from there, and the work that you do, and I know I did a brief introduction there, but for everyone listening who might not know your background in terms of working as a physical therapist, obviously fitness pain free as well, just want to give a little bit of a background to yourself.
Yeah, for sure. I guess when I grew up, I was always really into fitness and strength conditioning in general. I was a guy that was kind of reading about Louis Simmons and taking like old rusty chains from my dad's farm and bringing it into the gym and getting rust everywhere because I really wanted to try, you know, dynamic effort work, you know. Naturally led me into a career of personal training first. I went to school at Rutgers University. And graduated and started working in fitness and really loved it, but was just finding that folks were hurt and I wanted to help them out, you know. And I made the decision to go to physical therapy school, and I kind of maintain all my networks in the fitness world. And when I graduated, I just found a niche in strength and fitness, CrossFit, powerlifting, Olympic weightlifting. And I've been treating and helping those patients ever since. And then for the past 10 years or so, I've also been running fitnesspainfree.com, which is trying to help coaches and clinicians get better at working with the strength and fitness population.
Oh, nice. Cool. And with that, was that obviously, you know, with your own training and everything from, you know, PT and then balancing the physical therapist world, do you think that's kind of helped you be able to get an understanding of when you're working with clients, because, you know, you trained yourself, you know, got that passion for that, and then obviously how to help fix people as well, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I don't want to understate the importance of this. I think it's probably one of the most important, if not the most important aspect of where I'm at today, is because I was the practice what you preach kind of guy. And I saw that there is a problem that needed to be solved, and no one was really doing it at the time. So I jumped straight, you know, into that. And one of the reasons why I think I've been able to have some success and help these folks over the course of time is because I did it. You know, I competed for years and years in strongman, CrossFit, and continue to train like a madman all the time and do a bunch of stupid things, hurt myself and figure out how to fix myself. Right. And then you do the same thing for your patients. Right.
Yeah. So, cool. And what was the, because, you know, in terms of injuries yourself, was there, you know, some of the common injuries that you had before? Was there other injuries that you'd had that you can understand a little bit, or what's kind of your background with that?
Man, there's a lot of really good injuries I've had over the course of time. I don't know, if I kind of went through all my joints, I'd probably have most of the common stuff. Like, I've definitely had, you know, the garden variety patellofemoral pain, you know, maybe some quad tendinopathy stuff, sprained my ankles. I've had bilateral Achilles pain. I've had calf strain injuries, hamstring strains. I've dealt with some femoral acetabular impingement, labral stuff in my hips, low back pain, all sorts of types of low back pain, shoulder pain, rotator cuff related stuff. I've dislocated my shoulder a couple times, you know, elbow pain, you know, golfer's elbow, a bunch of wrist pain, neck pain. I'm lucky. I've never had to have a major surgery. Yeah. But I've definitely hurt myself a lot, you know, and I try not to, but I think it just kind of comes with the territory.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that there, because why I ask that is because I always think sometimes is that, you know, as coaches or as physical therapists, that I don't know, there seems to be sometimes a thought process that, oh, they'll never get injured because they know how to stop themselves getting injured. Whereas it's that thing of, well, No, like these things happen. It's just the case of sometimes. Okay, but from a, I don't know what the phrase I'm looking for. Maybe not the buying point of view, but actually building relationships with clients. If you've had injuries before, you can actually relate it to a little bit. So I know, like for myself, I actually hurt my back deadlifting, and obviously, a lot of people can have probably experienced that. And I can relate to them. I was like, yeah, it's pretty shitty, but I can still deadlift now. Like, you can get back to that point. It's just a case of that, there's things that you can do to maybe prevent injuries or reduce the risk of injuries, but sometimes these things happen. That kind of goes on to the first question or topic that I had in mind, since that we mentioned about injuries there, is that sometimes there's a train of thought. Obviously, you've said there you've done strongman, you've done CrossFit, a broad range of training that you've done there. But sometimes when people get injured, it's a case of, right, well, I'm just not going to do that movement again. I'm not going to do that at all. What's kind of your thoughts on that, and what's your approach to try and tackle that if people are kind of like, that's it, I'm just going to take it out, I'm just never going to do that again.
I know. It is kind of interesting, right? I mean, I talk about this all the time, but one of the biggest movements that hurts folks in the gym is the deadlift, right? You just experienced that. I've experienced that. If you lift weights for long enough and you push the deadlift for long enough, you're going to experience that at some point, probably. But what's hilarious is that you can use deadlifts to rehab from low back pain too, you know? And, I was actually listening. I think it was Tom Platz was talking about this, old school bodybuilder, enormous quads. I think I'm thinking of the right guy. But anyway, he was saying that the risk of deadlifting is not worth it for the potential injury you may get in your low back. And, that's a very polarizing thing to say to folks, because I think, at least in my world, and this is good, we're turning to this idea that weight training is good for you. It doesn't cause that huge kind of risk for injuries, right? And I think that deadlifting is something that can give you so much from a positive perspective in terms of building strength, muscle mass, confidence, bone density, all sorts of positives, right? But the other part is that if you're frequently pushing the deadlift, I think you're probably a little bit a higher risk of hurting your back. That's someone that's doing, let's say, hamstring curls or something that's maybe a little lower level, So I think in a lot of ways it is fair to say, like, you may not want to push that movement at the same degree, potentially, if you've had a long history of problems with it, and kind of other folks have had the same kind of thing going on. But largely, I'm a big believer in trying to continue with exercise, right? So I want to try to present both sides of it. But largely, if you do get hurt doing something like deadlifting, you can actually get better by continuing to deadlift. And the majority of folks that I work with, they want to keep deadlifting. So if you have a major injury from deadlifting, I'm still trying to deadlift in some capacity during rehab, and then getting back to some sort of deadlifting, usually after your pain has gone away or it's mostly gone. And the major reason why is because of all the health benefits, but also because the majority of my patients like deadlifting, and that's the reason why they came to see me in the first place. And I wouldn't be helping my patients if I told them, like, hey, stop deadlifting, because they came to me because they wanted the deadlift, right? So, yeah.
And with that, with the, because obviously, I know we used deadlifting as an example as there, but is there other areas where, because with any exercise, there's progressions and regressions from there. Is it a case of, sometimes that, for that movement that we are just going to drop it back a little bit, and things where it maybe would not is not as straightforward as a deadlift, where like it can be used to like, help him improve, whereas other exercises is a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, I think largely, and this goes for the low back and most other injuries. First and foremost, as a physical therapist, if someone comes to see me, I want to make sure they don't have a red flag, which essentially just means, let's make sure you don't have like back cancer, right? Because I don't want to give you a bunch of exercises when you clearly have something that exercise is not helpful for, you know what I mean? So that's basically it. Make sure there's no red flags in the beginning. And from there, you're pretty much free to exercise. And exercise, if dosed appropriately, is going to help you rehab, but also work towards your fitness goals, you know? So for a lot of people I work with, and I work with regular folks at just like strength training, but I also work with a lot of competitive athletes. And the thing is, the further you dial back in terms of training, the more you take yourself away from your goals, like your training goals, your fitness goals, your competitive goals. So you have to be a little careful with how far you pull back, right? So I think in the most ideal scenario, you train as close to what your training program is supposed to be while respecting that injury simultaneously, right? And for some folks, when they get low back pain, it's like, there's no way they're going to even bend forward, let alone deadlift, right? So I'm not going to tell that person like, dude, we need to find a deadlift variation for you. It's probably not going to happen, you know? But some folks, they only feel, let's say, low back pain when they get past 80 to 85% of their one rep max. They're like, you know what, Dan, when I go in the gym, I can actually deadlift pretty well until the weights get heavy, right? And for that person, maybe we just dial back a little in the intensity, right? Or maybe the speed. If we need to, we can change the lift variation, right? And for that person that, you know, can't even like twist or go down to pick a pencil off the floor, we have to really severely, you know, change their training program. But the training program very quickly will start to get more challenging as the person builds more tolerance over the course of time. So I think the big thing is A, rule out red flags, and then B, meet the person where they are. And as a person progresses, you just start to give them more and more and more. And ideally, you don't have to change the program very much. And if you change it too much, you just have to keep in mind as physical therapists, sometimes we're making people quite a bit worse. And if we're scaring people from exercise, we're keeping them from one of the most powerful things they can do to promote their health. So I just think that we have a lot of responsibility as physios, physical therapists, that we don't make a mistake and alter someone's life in that way, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And one thing that you touched on there is, you know, that tolerance or that the progression of exercises. And what's kind of, because it's like with anything, sometimes, and I'm, you know, just relating to myself when I hurt my back, like when you first go in, you are a little bit tentative. I'm sure you've had the same when you've had injuries before, and it's never going to be 100% comfortable. What's kind of like your what's your approach in terms of the language that you use to explain that? Because, you know, I know I've seen it with clients before that as soon as it's like a little bit of pain, even it might be, you know, even though it's not a 10 out of 10, it's like, oh no, it's uncomfortable. So that means I shouldn't be doing that. What's kind of your approach to get them to be like, no, like this is part of the process, if you like?
Yeah, for sure. I think we have a bit of research that helps to guide us. So I always try to use the medical literature, the research we do have when answering questions like this. So one is called the pain monitoring model. And what that means is that essentially, and this is mostly research in tendon-based problems. So think about patellar tendinopathy, Achilles tendinopathy. So largely when you exercise, if your pain is below about a 5 out of 10, right? So a 0 to 10 scale, 10 out of 10 is the worst, 0 is no pain. If it's below a 5 out of 10, it's probably going to end up being okay. As long as the next day you're back to your baseline. So say you have knee pain, right? And you do like a step down exercise. And you're like, yeah, that pain's about a 6 out of 10. That would be your baseline. And then when you go and exercise, let's say you're able to do your squats, your lunges, your step ups, all below that 5 out of 10. But the next day you try the step down test again, and you're at like 8 out of 10 or 9 out of 10. You made yourself more sore the following day. So the idea is you maybe did a little too much the day prior, right? And that's one of the major ways that I will kind of educate people on what I think is okay for those folks, right? Yeah. Another word you'll see a lot in our medical literature, and you'll see this with like hamstring and rotator cuff rehab, is this exercise tolerable to you, right? Because pain it's super subjective, right? One person, when they tell me it's a 5 out of 10, you know, is that going to be the same as someone else that says it's a 5 out of 10? Super hard to know. So these are general guidelines, and sometimes that tolerable word is actually pretty nice, because I think if anything's especially alarming, it seems like it's too much, right? The patient will back off. And I think if at the end of the day, if you think about what pain is, it's this protective mechanism, right? And when you have pain, it's your body's way of saying like, look, dude, I don't trust what you're doing and I want you to stop. So I'm going to give you a bunch of pain, right? And if a person feels an exercise is tolerable, we're not going beyond your body's alarm system. Because if we go beyond what the body feels is tolerable, your brain's going to be like, dude, what are you doing? Stop. You're doing too much. And it's probably going to create more pain, right?
Yeah.
The other thing I will say is that pain is not that important in the grand scheme of things, as long as your pain is getting better and your function is getting better over the course of time. And what I mean by that is that if week to week, month to month, you're either getting better from a pain perspective, or you're using more challenging exercises or more loads or more speeds, if things are moving in the right direction, then the amount of pain you experience while you're training isn't even as important, right? So there's going to be a lot of variation from patient to patient, and some patients are probably going to push more and above that 5 out of 10, although I don't do that too much. And some patients are going to pull back a little bit more. But at the end of the day, you rolled out your red flags and people are making progress over the course of time. And that's what's important. And I think the problem inherently with that is there's a lot of gray. And that's all right. You just tell folks, like, set that expectation. Like, we expect this to be a little bit of roller coaster, and we might not get it perfect the first go around. Trying to freak out, that's part of it. We'll just keep plugging along. So,
yeah, I think there was kind of like two follow up questions from there from what you said, and going to back on what we said about, you know, obviously if you're working as a personal trainer, and then obviously as a physical therapist, do you think that's sometimes where because I think, you know, for myself, I try and stay in, you know, my lane as a coach, and I want to refer out to people, you know, with expertise in their field. Do you think sometimes from a coach's point of view that they'll have an idea, they'll have a continuum of exercises and think, oh, well, if they're injured doing this, I'm just going to revert it back, rather than actually thinking about, right, there's a few more things to work on from there. And then the second thing is when you talk about like tolerable, how much does sort of like the level of or experience of their training dictate? Because, you know, sometimes people will have, you know, quite a high pain threshold, and other people will be like, oh no, actually that's straight away too much. So I realized two quite long questions there, but hopefully they make sense.
Yeah, no worries. Let's write down that second one, because I'm definitely going to forget it once I start. I think your first question, it's hilarious to me, right? So I was a personal trainer for years before I became a physical therapist. And if you've been a physical or a personal trainer for one day, you've probably dealt with someone with pain, right? And to me, it's so ridiculous that if you have a client that has pain, you should just say, I'm not going to address this. I'm going to send this person to a physical therapist. I'm going to stick my fingers and my ears and my head in the sand, and I'm just going to ignore this problem, right? Which is inherent. It's a huge problem because, you know, obviously you work with people that have pain every single day of the week, right? Now, as a personal trainer, I don't think it's your job to diagnose something and then treat something. Like I said, there could be some sort of like red flag that's masquerading that you're just, it's not in your training to figure out, right? A couple like interesting ones that it's probably worthwhile to refer to a physical therapist because you don't want to miss these, or something like shin pain, right? If you're a runner that has shin pain, like, oh, the shin splint, don't worry about it. Well, it could be a stress fracture. If they run through that and it breaks, it could be a big problem, right? If someone has, let's say, wrist pain, you know, could be garden variety wrist pain, could be a scaphoid fracture, which is another risky kind of bone stress injury. So I think that, you know, to be as safe as possible, if someone's dealing with some sort of pain problem and it's not rapidly resolving, then you just refer out to a physical therapist, doctor, as best you can. If you have like a good physical therapist you really trust, and I work with a lot of local personal trainers, it's not like they have to do a ton of physical therapy. They essentially just come in to see me, and I do the same thing. I rule out those red flags, and I give them an idea of expectations, you know, from an exercise standpoint of what's okay and what's not. I write a love letter to the trainer for some guidelines of what they can follow, right? But to try to answer your point a little bit, I do think that largely you're trying to still work towards that person's fitness goals, right? Yeah. So you're trying to respect the injury during that process. So what you do and I do is nearly identical. So essentially, if like, all right, it's deadlift day, but we can't deadlift, what can we do that's as most, you know, as similar as possible to the deadlift, right? And I think it's also reasonable for you to kind of troubleshoot their movement, say, well, your hips are a little stiff, and maybe I'd like to see it more upright in your squat, and we'll mobilize this area to get that better, right? So maybe you're trying to decrease some stress on a given area by improving mobility, right? Applying mobility exercises, modifying technique, that type of thing, right? And I think it's also reasonable to say, like, you know, you may have a client that says, I don't like my back hurting all the time. How do we like prevent future injuries? So like, let's kind of strengthen it, because that's probably helpful, right? If you're doing all of those things, I think that's in the scope of your practice, right? Modifying, working towards fitness goals, strengthening areas. That's pretty much what I do. So it's very gray. I just feel that I have way more experience doing it than the average personal trainer. But what's hilarious to me is that if a trainer is kind of doing their job appropriately and they're really good at modifying, they're going to rehab that person without trying to, you know? So at least in my mind, I'm the person that's called for more challenging cases for a lot of the trainers, you know? When I worked as a CrossFit coach, I would get swarmed after every single class, right? And it was a huge pain because I wasn't even able to train. Like, Jesus Christ, more people. How many people are coming to me today with all these injuries? And it's not a knock on CrossFit. It's just that, like, everybody has some sort of thing they're dealing with, right? My advice was essentially like, all right, let's back off of things that are hurting for a week or two. And as you start to feel better, start to ramp things up. And if it's not going well, just reach out to me, right? And I'd say probably like 90% of issues would go away just with that, you know? So I think as a personal trainer or coach, like that's super reasonable. Someone's pain problem pops up, you know, we modify for a bit and you see how it's going. It's not getting better in a week or two. Like, all right, might as well see the PT, right? Go see the physio, whatever. And let's get this taken care of. But yeah, I think it's very gray. I do wish there's more education out there. I'm personally trying to kind of fill that void, you know, in terms of pain education for coaches. So yeah, I don't even know if I answered your question there, but I was trying to.
No, you did. I think the key point from there, I've noted down the second question, so I'll follow up with that in there in a second. But what you said from there is that, and what was going around my head, and I never, I think you explained it well. I think sometimes when I say it, it doesn't always come out as right, but it's that phrase of, you know, is injury prevention good training, or is good training injury prevention? I think is the I can't remember what like the full line is, and I think if there's things from there, you know, like what you mentioned about, you know, somebody's back, is it a case of, well, actually, if we, you know, focus on technique, there's a lot of good things that you can do with that. I think sometimes, like what you mentioned, you know, there's focusing on the basics as a coach, as a trainer, in terms of good technique, you know, good programming, you know, not just absolutely hammering one joint. There's a lot of low hanging fruit that you can focus on there. Things that can't be fixed, you know, you need to find, you know, those physios, those physical therapists with that experience, like what you said from there, because, you know, especially I know for me, you know, when I first started out as a trainer, straight out of, you know, with my sports science degree, I was like, yeah, I know everything. Whereas actually, you know, the biggest thing is, and I don't know what your thoughts are, is that the more you see people move, the more you see people lift and actually, you know, train, the more you build up that bank of, well, this is what this should look like, and everyone's different, and you know, the red flags, like what you mentioned, you need to be looking at. That then goes on to the second question that I mentioned of, you know, there's lots of variety of people that will come to a physical therapist such as yourself with training experience, and their pain threshold is going to be massively different in terms of what they can tolerate. How do you, is that a little bit of a minefield? What's kind of like, how do you manage
Big time minefield.
that?
It's interesting. I really like this part of my job, you know. There's a big kind of psychological component, right? And what's a little tough, and it's a little different for a trainer, just because you tend to develop a relationship with a given person and you know them over the course of time. So if they get an injury, you kind of have an idea of the type of person they are. And that happens as physical therapists too, because inevitably people get hurt multiple times and you're kind of dealing with the same person that you already know with a second injury, or let's say it's the same injury but kind of got flared up again. But from the initial evaluation, so as soon as you start talking to a new patient, you're trying to figure out that patient. You're trying to get an idea of, like, is this person afraid of movement, or is this person kind of blowing through pain and ignoring it, right? And there's a huge spectrum from person to person, you know? And this is really interesting because we're getting more and more research about this. So there is these psychological profiles that increase your risk of injury. And one of them is perfectionism, a specific type of perfectionism. But if you think about it, if you have an athlete that basically their sense of self-worth is 100% wrapped around being an athlete, or if it's like a fitness person that's really, you know, sense of self is wrapped up in being a very strong person, oftentimes they are perfectionists, and that can be a very powerful thing because you're constantly trying to hit your sets and reps every single time you're in the gym, make progress so you can succeed over the course of time. But because of that, oftentimes we tend to ignore pain and kind of blow through it. I think because we have these perfectionistic tendencies, but also because like that threat of being injured takes away all of your sense of self-worth. So this coping mechanism that these athletes use is like denial. They're like, it doesn't hurt that bad. I can still lift, right? And they're dealing with probably like a 9 out of 10 pain, and they're just barely getting through their workouts, and they're just teetering on the edge of blowing up, right? And I think you kind of have to tease out those folks. And then you also have the type of person that is just very afraid to move. And the type of person I tend to get is someone who is very health conscious. They get an injury and they want to keep working out, but they want to get back in a safe manner, and they're not sure how to navigate pain. And they're not sure if it's okay to continue pushing through pain, right? So those are kind of the two spectrums usually that I see. And a lot of times it's an educational process of educating those folks that are kind of blowing through pain that like, look, and this is tough because people want to continue. Like you can explain this to some athletes, you know, and it just goes in one ear and out the other, no matter how many times you say it. So it's a very, very challenging thing. But you're trying to let them know like, hey, if you're pushing through pain and you're getting worse, you're moving yourself further away from your goals. And every time you do that, you know, it may seem like the right thing to do to push hard, because that's basically the strategy you use to become a high level athlete, but it's not working right now. If you keep doing this, I think you're just going to end up in a bad place and you may get hurt worse. And that's a very real message that some athletes need to hear. And then on the flip side, you'll have some folks that are really afraid to work. And I try to get in their mind a little bit, by just educating them, because sometimes they just don't know that pain is okay. And it's just your body's way of trying to protect you. But we do have some cool studies that show that if you push into a little bit of pain, right? And again, we want to make sure there's no red flags before we do this. You're going to have a little faster progress. And what I tell folks is that, you know, exercise is medicine. And if you're feeling a little bit of that same pain you normally feel, that means the medicine is getting in the right area, right? Yeah. So that kind of flips their mindset a little bit. So in one athlete, you're maybe even putting a little fear in their mind. I know that's an unpopular thing to say in the physical therapy world, because we're, I think as a population, as physical therapists, we tend to scare people too much, right? Mm-hmm. But I do feel that some athletes do need to have that reality check, because they're very clearly hurting themselves, right? And having a little bit of fear around certain movements and overdoing things allows them to make better decisions in the future and then be able to work towards their goals. So I think in some cases that's going to be appropriate. I'd say in the large majority of folks in a general population, it's the opposite. You're trying to just do anything in your power to get them moving. So at the end of the day, it's tough, but you're trying to figure out the type of person you're dealing with as soon as you start talking to them. And then you're giving them advice based on where you think they are in their journey, you know?
Yeah. With the one thing that you touched on there with the you know, scaring clients, scaring people about that, do you think that's because maybe the language in terms of used, how to relate that to training, rather than being like, you know, you mentioned a couple of injuries there that you've had personally, which are like, when you say words like that, it's like, oh no, that's quite a long scary word, whereas actually, oh no, actually it's my elbow's flared up, or I've done this, or I've done that. Do you think it's sometimes the language around, you know, what these injuries are, if that kind of makes sense?
Yeah, for sure. Language definitely matters in what we're telling patients, you know. There's some super interesting research. I don't know if you follow, guy's name is Michael Ryman. He's a big researcher, mostly for the hip. He's at Duke University in the States, and he's constantly posting good research about people's beliefs around what healthcare providers have told them, right? And there's some crazy numbers. So around like 50% of folks that have, let's say, a disc injury in their spine on imaging, but they don't have symptoms, they would still get a surgery, right? To fix that or correct that. And it's a similar number with the neck. So it's very easy, extremely easy, to say something to a given patient and have them to immediately adopt a belief that makes them potentially take a step in a bad way, right? So I think the way you navigate patients from a communication standpoint is incredibly important. So we don't give them a little piece of information that sticks with them for the next 50 years that serves them in a negative way, because it does happen. And the health literacy that people have is unfortunately extremely low. I get it. Like if you ask me a question about plumbing, I'm stupid. Like it's not what I do for a living, you know, and even when my plumber explains it to me, I forget it in the next 20 minutes. Same thing goes for healthcare and telling people about whatever illness they have. I've had so many patients that have come to me that they kind of stop doing a specific movement, lunge, squat, overhead press, because some healthcare professional told them it was bad or they shouldn't do it at the time, or the patient didn't really understand what the healthcare provider was trying to communicate. So I do think you have to maintain kind of a hopeful, positive message. And we're trying our best to deal with humans, and humans aren't perfect, right? So, yeah, I guess that's why they call it clinical practice, right? We're still trying to figure it out.
yeah, definitely. And I like to touch on that because I think sometimes, people do get scared, and I think everyone always has a thought process that it's going to be a lot more sinister than what it is. But it's like with anything, it's a little bit like I don't, this might be the worst analogy in the world, but it's something like when you burn your hand when you're cooking at the time, it's like, Jesus Christ, this is awful. But then actually it's like, oh, okay, it's not as bad as where it started. I think, there's a knee-jerk reaction with quite a lot of things. With the one thing that you touched on is that, some people who is going to just blast through pain and with a lot of people, listening, a lot of people that I work with obviously compete in strength sports, whether that's strongman, weightlifting, powerlifting, CrossFit or anything like that. Do you think there is a shift that a lot more people are trying to fine-tune the bodies, like get regular MOT checkups if you like, and see how the body's getting on? Because as sports, there seems to be especially with powerlifting and weightlifting, it's getting a lot more professional. People are they are athletes, they're taking care of the nutrition, taking care of the bodies, rather than just a case of I'm going to eat everything and just try and lift as much weight. Do you think that's the same from an injury point of view, and looking after their bodies a little bit more?
Yeah, definitely. I have I don't know, a bunch of athletes that compete at the national level. And yes, they do care very much about optimizing their body, and that's very much from a nutrition standpoint, training standpoint, and physical therapy standpoint, you know. And you know, I see folks fairly regularly that compete at a high level, and one of the things we're really trying our best to do is to try to keep them as safe as possible moving forward with whatever orthopedic injury they're seeing, you know. So I kind of feel like I know what you're talking about, because when I competed in strongman, I'm a little guy, right? Like I competed at like 200 and 175, but I got to a pretty high level. But I would say that the level of training, like the amount that athletes nowadays are dialed in from a training standpoint, nutrition standpoint, sleep recovery standpoint, optimizing hormone supplementation, all this stuff is a lot better than it used to be. And I also work at a place that's Champion Physical Therapy and Performance, and we actually see a lot of pro baseball players too. I'd say that oftentimes a lot of the weightlifters are doing more than the pro baseball guys are. And it really depends, right? There's some pro baseball guys that are doing everything, you know, in their power to be as good as they can from an athlete standpoint, but in the CrossFit powerlifting realm, I've seen folks doing the same amount or more. So, yeah, I think you're right for sure.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's a culture side of things, because I've got a couple of friends that work in sort of like rugby union and rugby league over in the UK. And I think sometimes there's that thought process of like, when people are just straight out of the academy, out of their scholarship, they're keen, they want to impress in everything they do, not just on the pitch, but also in the gym. Whereas sometimes there's maybe like the older guys who are like, I don't need to do this in the gym, like I've only got however many seasons left. So I think sometimes it's a balance of how it is. But I think, it's just going to show that there was actually an interview with a rugby union player who he was getting criticized. So he was 38 and he's still playing at the top level after having a little bit of time off. And he was basically saying, he's a professional athlete, he's paid to look after his body so he could perform on there. So he was like, age is kind of like, if he can still do it on a Saturday, why not do that? And it just goes to show, he used examples of other athletes who haven't looked after themselves, who now have, a lot of injuries after their career's done. So I think sometimes, it's that culture shift of it. One thing that you mentioned a couple of times as well is obviously training as a medicine, as it's that thing of that's going to be able to keep us active and keep us fit and healthy. Do you think where do you think there's a breakdown in communication with that, where like people are always focusing on like quick fixes or this magic fruit from their Amazon rainforest that's going to help them achieve everything or unlock this mobility? And what's the entry point of exercise training to be able to reap those benefits, if you like?
Yeah, I'd like to think that our kind of understanding as a culture, an international kind of global culture too, is that exercise is good for helping folks with pain and injuries. But I guess thinking about it, growing up, when you have an injury, usually just time heals things. So essentially, if you get a cut, twist your ankle or something like that, you spend some time away from activities that hurt it, like jumping, running, whatever, and it just heals on its own. So I think what happens for a lot of folks is that they'll get like maybe one of the first major injuries and they're like, okay, this is not getting better, or it's been going on for a long period of time. What's going on here? And their only strategy that they've learned throughout the course of their life is that, all right, I have an injury, I rest, it gets better, right? So that's literally the only thing they know how to do. So when they see someone like me, I'm like, oh yeah, that's common, but you can get better with some exercise. It like blows their head, it's just not information I think the majority of folks really get growing up, unless you've had physical therapy a few times, right? But yeah, it's just you're changing the way people think about healing and recovery and that type of thing. And I think particularly with strengthening, and basically let's talk about the strength world or barbell athletes. I think this is a largely a community that was ignored or shunned, just in the sense that a lot of healthcare providers would tell these folks that what they're doing is very dangerous, which we know now it's not dangerous. It has a similar risk of injury as other sports, and oftentimes less, right? And the other part is that no one was talking about using fitness-based exercises to heal from a major injury, right? Like 10 years ago, it would be crazy if a doctor told you, like, oh, your back hurts. Oh, just back off a little bit. That should help your back. Most surgeons would say, like, are you an idiot? Never deadlift again. And I think a lot of that is changing, but that's the common advice that was given. Like, A, you rest, you stay away from those activities, they're too dangerous. And then there's no one out there that's going to help navigate you getting back. So essentially, people go out on their own and try stuff. And lo and behold, the back would get better. And they're like, why did that doctor tell me I should never deadlift again? Because my pain went away and I'm still deadlifting, and deadlifting is good for you from what I'm reading. Right. So there's that weird disconnect. I don't know. It's changing.
Absolutely. Because I think, with anything, because we're in the era, if you like, of information. There's so much information out there, but I think sometimes when there is that much information, it's quite hard to filter that out and actually put it all into practice because there is so much there. It's a little bit like the amount of Netflix recommendations I get. Sometimes it's hard to work your way through
Or watch it
everything.
all.
So I was absolutely. With that as well, do you think just touching on that point, with so much information out there, social media, the internet, and all those sorts of things, there isn't kind of like there's no entry point of what people can put out there. So people would say, like, if you do this, this, and this, this is what's gonna cause there, without any sort of like review to see if that's useful. Do you think that's where quite a lot of myths around injury and pain come from?
Yeah, that's a real tough one. Very much true. And I think you see this in a lot of industries. Nutrition's a huge one, and it's very confusing because there's keto diets, paleo diets, carnivore, Atkins, vegetarian, vegan, what's best? There's a billion different diets out there, and every single person has their own like idea of what's best. And they also, there's people out there that appear very smart, and they're saying that this system's the best, and another person says this system's the best, and this system that you guys are trying to follow is stupid, and they're disagreeing. So there's just so much media surrounding what's right and what's wrong. And it is tough, right? Because from a pain perspective, there's a lot of folks trying to make money off of pain, right? Like icy hot, hot packs, cold packs, like, you know, Shaquille O'Neal is telling you need to try this cream to help you with your low back pain, right? It's like, all right, well, maybe you just need to walk a little bit. That's probably going to work a bit better. So there's way too much information out there, I think, to your point. A lot of folks out there have, you're trying to make money, which is not bad because I'm trying to make money too. But I think it's important that you don't spread misinformation. I think the other thing is that people will put out content they know is polarizing or attention grabbing just because it's going to make them more popular. And that's their goal behind, you know, being a social media influencer, right? And that's tough. So I'm a big time advocate of at least trying to put out good information. The other thing that's challenging is I don't like to bash other people in my profession. I'd like to see our profession raising each other up, and we tend to argue a lot amongst ourselves. But to be honest, there's people in my profession that are spreading information too, and that's confusing. So it's tough. I think my solution is to try to put out as much good content as possible and to try to build other good providers like yourself and other physical therapists and coaches, and just try to create a better community that's pushing a positive message to the masses and helping, you know.
Absolutely. I think, you know, that's part of the reason, well, the main reason. So originally I started this podcast just on my people, were, members and clients were asking me questions and called episode one, answer the question. Then it gets to a point where, you know, I didn't feel confident that the answers that I would give were going to be sufficient. So, you know, reach out to speak to people who are more experienced to be able to put the answer from there. And it's that case of, you know, if people can take things from it, you know, there's information there that people can take out. And I think if that's what's going to help improve, rather than be like, well, no, he said this or she said this, or actually I'm going to go against that, because then that way the only person that's suffering is that person who's actually looking for help, being like, so what do I do to fix my back again? Because there's so much information out there. Quite a lot of topics and a few tangents thrown in there, Dan. But the last question that I like to ask from everything that we've chatted about there, what would be your take home points or words of wisdom for everyone listening?
For sure. What I'll ask is, what do you think is your target audience? Give me a
So
picture of what.
target
Go ahead.
audience here are people involved in barbell sports training, looking to get stronger, either competing or looking to compete, and sort of newer, I'll probably say newer coaches to the fitness industry, if you like.
All right, good stuff. I guess I'll split it. Because I do think that there's a little bit of difference between coaches and kind of the average person, you know. In terms of working with pain and injury, I'd say just find a good physio, physical therapist that you trust that's not going to take that patient and say, the reason why I got hurt is because your trainer sucks, right? Because you will see that, you know, you'll refer to a doctor, or you'll refer to a physical therapist, and the physical therapist just ruins your, just basically takes money out of your pocket. Like it's the worst, right? So find someone you really trust and someone you can kind of communicate with and also shares a passion for lifting, right? And works with lifters. I think that's really, really important. I would say try your best to learn how to modify training when folks have pain, right? So refer out when needed, but when someone has pain, learn some of the basic principles about how to modify training, right? And keep on working towards your athlete's fitness goals, right? I think that's really important. For the newer athlete or someone who's just in a barbell sport, keep in mind that injuries do happen over the course of time. And when they do pop up, it's not the end of the world. They do happen. And what I will say is that the athletes that are veterans in any sport, really, but a lot at Champion work with these pro baseball players, and I work with a lot of high-end powerlifters. The ones that do the best are the ones that continually get hurt over the course of time. And they just realize that's part of the sport. They rehab, they get back, and they try to make smarter decisions. The folks that don't make it are usually the ones that they get an injury, they spiral out of control from a psychological standpoint, right? They keep on blowing through pain, they never get better, they stop competing, they're so frustrated with it. So injuries happen. Find a good physio, learn how to modify your training, keep working towards your fitness goals. And I guess that's it.
Yeah, I think there were some good points there, because it's a little bit like what we said before. You know, is there that injury prevention there, or is good training around that to, you know, if you get the things in place, it's gonna help with that. Thanks a lot for taking the time to jump on, Dan. Really enjoy chatting with you today. I think there were some really useful takeaway points that people can use from there. If anyone has got any questions about what we've chatted about today, see the content and information that you put out there, where could people reach out to you or find you?
Yeah, for sure. So my company is Fitness Pain Free. I'm on all the social media platforms. So Instagram is probably the best way to reach me. I also have a ton of information out on YouTube and my website, fitnesspainfree.com. If you want to reach out to me directly, I will answer. So if you direct message me on Instagram, I'll get back to you, right? And if you want to learn more from me, I just recommend going to my website and sign up for a newsletter. Basically have a weekly newsletter, and the whole goal behind that is to make you a better coach and clinician. So that's it.
Oh, cool. Awesome. And for everyone listening, if you haven't seen the content information that Dan puts out there, 100%, check out everything that he puts out there. Some really, really useful stuff. So, thanks a lot, Dan, for taking the time to jump on. Thanks a lot to everyone listening, and I will see you all next week.